I believe that no one can get to the age of 20 unscathed. Satan will mess you up. He's well-practiced, he is an expert at creating chaos and pain in a person's life. So by the time I got to high school, my behaviors were pretty indicative of some deep emotional distress. And my parents were baffled because they did everything they could. They provided a solid Christian family, a stable, nurturing environment. But by the time I was 15 or 16, I was out of control and they didn't know what to do. So I think that's probably the roots of my codependency, is a sense of not belonging, not connecting, and being so desperate for connection and attention. By the time I was a teenager, I would do anything I could. Some of the symptoms that made it clear that I was struggling with those issues were I was sneaking out, I was drinking a lot, I was smoking pot, I was having, you know, very close relationships with boys, and I started to dress very provocatively, wear a lot of makeup for a rather young girl. I found my identity in my appearance and my sensuality and my ability to attract boys, and I think that was the first really huge red flag of codependency, that I would do anything for attention, anything for peer acceptance, and I had no limits and no boundaries. I became an international fashion model, and it wasn't something I'd really dreamed of as a child, but it came to me and I'm like, why not? What a great, easy job. I can travel around the world, I can wear pretty clothes, getting my picture taken isn't terribly hard. However, there was always a sense of hunger, a sense of not connecting. By then I had developed a very hard, tough girl exterior to protect myself. I was so afraid in the world. I was on my own completely at the age of 19. I had no one to take care of me, no one to protect me, no one to guide or mentor me in my life. And for me, being nice didn't feel safe. Being kind and gentle felt vulnerable because in that, you know, short period from, say, 16 to 19, so many things had happened, and I'd been taken advantage of so many times. I was starting to turn into a very cold, very hard, self-protective person. That's how wounded I was. I was a bulldozer running rampant on the streets of life with many emotional casualties in my path, and I didn't know it. And there was always that sense of hunger at the end of the day. And I set goals for myself. I would set, I'm gonna have this amount of money in the bank by the time I'm 25. I'm gonna be debt-free and have like $10,000 in the bank, and I did. And I'm gonna be on this many magazine covers, and I'm gonna have an agency in Paris and Germany and Milan and Athens, and I did. And every one of these goals was so exciting, and yet at the end of the day, I still had this hunger and this emptiness because I lacked the ability to do relationship in a healthy way.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie Anderson.
And I'm Dr. Kitty. And today on Unhooked, we are going to be talking about codependency or people pleasing.
Today we have some great guests with us. We have Chaplain Dillis Brooks with us. We have Dr. Dora with us once again. So good to have you both with us again.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was wondering if you might be able to share with us a little, what is codependency? What does that look like?
When I think of codependency, I think of dependent personality traits, which are listed in the DSM-4, which is our manual for mental health diagnoses. And you've got all sorts of traits that fit that diagnosis. There are like 9 of them. But it's someone who wants somebody else to take responsibility for them, to make their decisions for them. They tend not to disagree with others. They do unpleasant things for other people in order to get them to like them. They're definitely afraid of being rejected. Acceptance is you know, their whole life being, and not being accepted is a genuine fear that they have in life. Yeah. So it's driven a lot by fear. Yeah.
So what about relationships? How does this play out in the context of relationships, whether it be at home, with family members, or in the workplace? How does that work itself out?
I think you find these individuals, they just want to do whatever makes another person happy. You know, they don't know how to say no. They rarely say no. And it almost feels uncomfortable for someone else who's outside looking on, and you're going, why are you doing that? Why are you just giving over your rights, your thoughts, patterns to this person's leading? And so it really makes someone who is independent and self-supporting, when they meet someone like this, they're not really sure what to do with them. And sometimes people who are independent and self-supporting attract these other individuals as well, and they start attaching to them, you know, outside of their own current behavior patterns.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. In terms of addiction or addicts, how does codependency play in the scenarios when there's addiction in the situation?
Well, again, the person playing off of Phyllis's comments on not being able to say no, they cannot say no. So even though they realize this addiction is coming into their home, it's difficult for them to stand up for themselves and to create boundaries that this is not going to happen. They're afraid of losing this person so much that they're willing to accept all the consequences that drug brings into the home.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're in denial as well, that there is a negative repercussion for the choice this person is making. And they may even go overboard in trying to fix everything else, you know, and making sure that we're taking care of the kids and we're taking care of that and showing up for work and doing all the right things so as to not to you know, identify or show that the person who's bringing the drugs into the house and the person who's doing the things that are causing the problem in the family.
They're fixing the messes, so to speak.
You know, a fear of rejection is probably quite common for anyone. You know, how do you help someone, or what's the difference, I guess, between someone who deals with it in a healthy way and then someone who just copes with it in just a totally unhealthy way?
Well, from my perspective, a person who is afraid of being rejected, they sometimes they go overboard with that process, and so they defer decisions to the other person completely, you know, and so their voice becomes smaller and smaller and less audible, almost to the point of where they become invisible, and so in a sense, who they are, you know, is displaced. And if they link up with someone, it's typically someone who wants to control them. Mm-hmm. And so the narcissist and the dependent seem to be like a good match. So the dependent actually gives up his or her identity. The narcissist, in a sense, is being fed, I mean, by the dependent. They're being nourished to be more narcissistic. So there's a loss all across the board. This person, the narcissist, never learns to be empathetic, never pays attention to other people's needs. The dependent learns to sacrifice his or her needs. And to be honest, that's not what God wants for any of us. Mm-hmm. He wants us to value ourselves, to value each other. Mm-hmm. And when we get caught up in these codependent relationships, we're doing none of those things.
Wow. It might lend itself then to them also becoming users?
Possibly, you know, if a person becomes, you know, hits a despairing moment hard and fast, you know, nothing's ever going to improve, they may additionally sink into some addictive behaviors themselves just to survive. But it's really an artificial form of survival from my perspective.
So why is it important for the people pleaser, the codependent, to set appropriate boundaries and talk about the power of no, saying no, being able to say no?
I think as Dr. Dora was just saying, it gives you space for your voice to come to the surface. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us have a voice. All of us are made, the Bible says, in the image and likeness of God. We're aware that sin is in the world. However, despite sin, God sent his son to come and die for us sinners. Mm-hmm. So being able to say no is the beginning of identifying and understanding, I am someone, I am special. You know, regardless of my flaws and my issues, God says, I'm special. And so no begins the process of saying, I have a voice, I get to speak up, and I get to disagree with you, and I'm okay with that.
And I totally agree with that, and I would add that it is the most loving thing that we can do with the other person, is to help him or her grow in terms of being more compassionate to those around him.
Do you think it's particularly difficult for Christians to set boundaries and to say no? It seems like we always express love by always saying yes. But in reality, sometimes as a believer, you have to say no. Speak to that a little bit about being a believer, a Christian, and setting boundaries and saying no. Sorry.
That's the problem.
Go ahead.
You know, I think I work with young adults all the time, and especially when it comes to dating and the issue of them dating and who not to date, it's always interesting to hear them say, almost reinvent themselves sometimes because they want to become someone so that they'll be loved and they'll be liked. And then we start talking about, no, think about it. You're made in the image and likeness of God, right? That's what the Bible says. David says that before we were even thought of, God knew who we were. Before we were in our mother's bellies, God knew who we were. So when you start to understand who you are, then you'll start seeing how valuable you are. So that makes difference in the choices you make. So just because he showed up doesn't mean you say yes, right? Just because she looks like she's the right one doesn't mean you follow. You step back a little bit, you pay attention, you ask questions. And so those boundaries help you to start defining, well, what will I let into my life and what won't I let into my life?
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a break and be right back.
God has a way of getting through to us arrogant, self-reliant sort of people. And sometimes he has to bring us to our knees to bring us to our knees. He allowed a series of circumstances to come into my life and made me realize how meaningless and how shallow my life was, in spite of the polished exterior, the acclaim, the money, the travel, the men, the possessions. And I thought, wow, what has my life come to? All the things I could count on before, my physical energy, my ability to make money, even my fragmented and shallow social connections were all taken away. I finally said, okay, God, you be the boss. Please come and take control of my life because I'm obviously not able to do this. And whatever you have for me, I'm ready to face. And I'd like to say my life was just peachy keen and perfect after that. But I think our emotional woundedness doesn't just go away the day we become a Christian. I had left fashion, meanwhile. I've been working for the last decade nearly at a wonderful Christian nonprofit, very fulfilling work, and yet because of my own need for approval, I drove myself so hard. And I never felt I was enough at work. I never felt I was enough at home. And I was not a happy, balanced person. I would even have a conversation with God. God, you know, I heard about that car accident on the news, the mother of two young children got killed. I don't have kids, Lord. Why wasn't that me? Let me go. I'm tired of this life. I'm tired of feeling exhausted, not enough, overwhelmed all the time. I'm not sleeping well. I'm not feeling well. I'm not relating to my husband or treating him well. I'm making it hard for everyone around me, and I'm crushing myself. It got to the point where I didn't know what else to do. And I'd heard about this place called The Bridge. But I said, I work for a treatment center. I don't need a treatment center. How humiliating. And I'm all about ego, and I'm all about self-concept, and I'm all about, I can do this. I don't need to go to a treatment center. Plus, I'm not addicted to drugs. That's for people that are addicted to drugs. Well, as I learned more and had some more conversation, talked to some people who'd been through the program, talked to some people that worked at the program, I realized that it's not just for people who are addicted to drugs. Treatment is for people who are addicted to anything. And even if they don't have an addiction that is visible in their life, it's for people that have hurt hearts and are emotionally wounded and need a very special place to get away from doing life and focus on their emotional healing.
Welcome back to Unhooked, where we've been talking about codependency. I'm just wondering, how does this play out in the home with children when there's codependency in the family?
Wow. Well, obviously, if you're modeling these behaviors, the chances of the child picking up these behaviors are going to be increased. And so they're going to move on to relationships later in life, where they're going to kind of attract the same type of person who's going to be controlling them. It's not a good combination. Yeah.
And it's repeating the sins of the father almost. Mm-hmm. So you look at family structure and you look at families and you start saying, wait a minute, there's a pattern here. Mm-hmm. My mother did it. My mother's mother did it. My mother's mother's did it. Mm-hmm. So this is the norm in this particular home. Mm-hmm. And so the children grow up into this process, and unless someone intervenes and says, wait a minute, mm-hmm. just because you've seen it for generations doesn't mean that this is actually the way mm-hmm. life should be and what God intended for us.
Sure. Dillis, you were talking earlier about young adults that you work with, and I have a heart for young adults as well. And, you know, we've heard all of our lives that we're made and created in the image of God, and yet I think sometimes people don't recognize it, or especially young adults, because of the culture in which we live. Speak to that. How do we help them to understand that they are in fact created, and their value and worth and sense of self-esteem should come from that information that God created them?
You know, there's a pastor that I met years ago when I was a much younger adult. And I remembered him saying, self-esteem means I have value. Mm. And I've never forgotten that. Mm. And that's a place to begin, to say, wait a minute, I have value. How much value do I have? As a Christian, I go to Scripture to find out what it says about me. I say to young women a lot, when you're choosing a mate or you're choosing a young man that you think you want to date exclusively, go to Ephesians 5. Is this a man who would die for you? I say to the young men, has she demonstrated anything at all to make you go, I'm going to die for this girl? Mm-hmm. You know, when you start thinking about Jesus, who is our example, showed us, look, you are all worth dying for. Mm-hmm. In the midst of sin, on the cross, as you're calling out to crucify me, he's declaring, Father, forgive them. We are worth his blood and his life. And I think that's the beginning, to be able to say, I have value. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And God didn't create us to not have a voice. Our voices are very important. If we're in a relationship and our voice suddenly becomes inaudible, you know, the chances of us actually holding on to that relationship, which is what we really want in the end, goes down from my perspective. I mean, we become uninteresting, we become boring. That person eventually is going to kind of disentangle himself or herself from the relationship because I'm just too boring. So learning to make our voices audible just the way God would want our voice to be audible is so important.
It sounds to me what we're talking about through this conversation is that there needs to be, you know, obviously that acceptance, that love, that nurturing, and yet there has to be boundaries.
Yes.
And so this balance becomes very important in our relationships. What are some ways in which we might be able to do that, to learn how to do that?
Well, first of all, insight is the first part of the formula. You have to understand, well, maybe I'm obtaining this short term, but long term I'm going to be losing these things. Creating that awareness is half the battle. Once you understand that those are the dynamics truly at play, then you can start taking these baby steps and practicing ways to be assertive. No, I'm sorry, I can't take that on right now. I've got too much on my plate. You understand, don't you? Yeah, this is when the nonverbal stuff kicks in. It's hard not to go... Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go like this when somebody's going like this.
Yes.
We're kind of going, okay. So you kind of practice with a clinician, hopefully doing some of these small steps in terms of being a little bit more assertive with your language and hopefully practice in a social setting before you actually take that practice out to the real people in your life who mean a lot to you and you don't want to lose them. And hopefully all that practice will pay off and people will... tolerate the changes. If they love you enough, they'll tolerate the changes that you've made.
Absolutely. And I want to piggyback on that whole insight thing. It's so important to be able to look at yourself and understand the consequences of the choices that you're going to make long term. Mm-hmm. I was joking with Dr. Dora during the break that I'm a recovering, you know, codependent, especially in the church setting. Mm-hmm. You want to say yes for everything.
Yes.
Everybody comes and they go,
mm-hmm.
Hey, would you, and you're so skilled at this, and you're so good at this. And you start going, yeah, I am, aren't I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be, how? And then you start realizing that you're the one stressed out, you're the one staying up late at night, and it doesn't feel like a blessing when you're just mad at everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's the learning to say, wait a minute, if I say yes now, how many no's do I have to say later? If I say no now, how many yeses can I say later? You know, it's so important to be able to do that.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's actually good sometimes to say no to somebody else because then they're in a situation where they can grow
Absolutely.
From the experience of doing it for themselves. That's not a bad thing.
So we're modeling that.
Yes.
You know, I can totally understand
win-win.
And relate to what you're saying in the sense of, you know, sometimes it's very validated that
Yes. We
need to be out there doing more and you know, people pleasing seems
yes.
like... You know, that's what we should be doing in a way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that sense, but it sounds to me that intervention is real important and helpful in these situations.
Yes. Very much so.
Mm-hmm. How do we help people say no?
My husband would say, just say no.
Just say no. Exactly.
Start with that. Say no.
Absolutely.
You know, just practice it if you have to in the mirror. Mm-hmm. When someone... No.
Maybe it begins in our communities
bobbing.
Of faith. Yeah, do that.
Yes.
Do
the
head bobbing.
Church
you
church communities tend to be places where everyone wants to say yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very good.
Thank you both for being with us today and such a stimulating conversation on codependency. And Unhooked will be right back.
Codependency is a funny thing. And it's a term that gets bandied around a lot in our society, and people just talk about it, and they just love to label everybody else as codependent if they have any dysfunction in their life whatsoever with relationships. I learned at the Bridge that codependency is foundational to all of our symptomology, all of our behavior issues, whether it's addiction or an inability to handle stress. But really at the core of it was that need for love and acceptance. And I first had to realize that God loved and accepted me. And I have intrinsic value, not because of what I do, but because of who I am in Him. Secondly, I had to love and accept myself in spite of my imperfections, which was very hard for me. It's so hard for me to say no because it feeds my ego when I'm asked to do things at church or in the community or for a friend. I still struggle with saying no sometimes, but that's probably the most important word I've learned in my journey out of codependency. My number one responsibility, my number one call is my relationship with God, followed by my relationship with my husband and my relationship with myself. Those are my primary responsibilities. I see how codependency has colored nearly every area of my life, and I see how it's poisoned nearly every relationship I've ever been in. And I don't mean just romantic, because a lot of our most important relationships are not romantic. They're with our parents, our father, our mother, our siblings, our coworkers, the friends we have. The friends we sort of have, the friends we wish we could still have. And I see that need to control, contrive, seek attention and approval, that need to be right, that need to caregive, was not only wearing me out, but it was wearing them out. You know, going to a treatment center was probably the hardest choice, or one of the hardest choices I've ever made in my life. But I learned through that process and the subsequent 12-step work that God can take care of other people. God can manage their lives and give them guidance and bring them the resources they need. It's not my job. For me, becoming unhooked means being free from the burden of carrying all those things that I didn't have to carry in the first place. For me, being unhooked means I can let God do His job and handle the world and run my life, and all I have to do is my personal best and rest in the peace and freedom, knowing that He's got everything in control. I'm Jennifer, and I'm Unhooked.
Jennifer shared her painful story about codependency and how it had a grip on her life. Many times in addict families, one person takes on the role of the codependent in the family. The one who tries to manage the addiction, the one who tries to make up for the deficiencies of the addict, whether it's working in place of the addict not working, or whether it's meeting other needs in the family, the codependent is the one who feels that they need to do it. Codependency is a devastating illness. It's as much a disease as a primary addiction is. And it can kill us just as much as addiction can. In fact, there's been research showing that in hospital settings, 2/3 of the patients who are admitted for depression are really there for a codependency issue. In recovery from codependency, forgiveness is one of the important issues that needs to be wrestled with. Not only do we need to forgive people that we've hurt by our codependency or by our addiction, but we also need to ask forgiveness for the way we've hurt others. Forgiveness is a big challenge, and I want to share with you the beginning of the process of forgiveness that's found in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. It shares like this: get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. So, we are to forgive one another. But the big question is why? Well, this verse tells us that we are to forgive one another when they've hurt us because Jesus first forgave us. The reality is that we didn't deserve forgiveness. We were sinners, and while we were still God's enemies, He chose to forgive us. And because of what Jesus did, God forgives us. Because of that, we take courage to begin a process or a journey of forgiving other people as well. All of us have been hurt. All of us have experienced pain at the hand of someone else. Therefore, all of us need to learn what it means to forgive. We find a God who's forgiven us. Therefore, we can forgive others. For more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. You can choose to become unhooked today.